Alrighty, so Stormers, Sharks and the Bulls, they're all out of the Investec Champions Cup. Not one of them made it through to the knockouts. Stormers were so cuck, actually, that they didn't even qualify for that Europa EPCR Challenge Cup thingy that the Sharks won last year. They're out of all cups altogether. All they have now is the URC and Curry Cup. So, what's going wrong? Can it be fixed? Is rugby itself actually a little bit fucked right now that we can't compete in these sort of tournaments? There are a lot of narratives being thrown around, obviously, which we could obviously just regurgitate to you, but you come here for the meat. You come here for the business. And that's what we're going to give you today with a full-on rugby show. As always, I am accompanied on this with Sandile right here, going green and gold to make a real purposeful mark. And then my mate Darby Lowe on the far side there, he's joining us today. Now, Darby knows more about rugby than I could ever know. He's my favorite oak to watch games with live, which we've done a few times at Loftus. So he is pretty much the man to have on the couch for this episode. Yes, gents, thanks for joining us as always.
Thank you for having me.
Darby, you're a Bulls fan. Guilty. Let's just get that out of the way straight away. So you
where
probably
segue quickly just to get straight to it.
Well, I mean, I've already made it known I'm a Stormers fan. So there's no hope for me in this conversation other than vibes. Yeah. But Darby, as your team is still probably the best placed, but we'll get to that in a bit. Sandile, I know it's a rugby show.
Yeah, I mean, it's done all right.
And we are going full rugby.
100%.
But we have to have our check-ins.
Oh, fuck off. Are we having our sports check-in?
We have to have our weekly check-in about what's been going on. So we're going to start with the poll from last week. So if you mind just bringing up the slide there, Flex. Last week's poll was the SA20. You know, I want to get some sentiment. Where are you guys at with this? Do you absolutely love it? Do you sometimes watch it? Or do you think cricket sucks?
You know what? Like I told you, the pop version of cricket will always reign. It brings everybody together. Whether you're 50 overs or a test guy, this element of cricket is a family affair type of cricket. So I'm glad that 67% followed it. And, you know, we spoke about it last week, the global, you know, aspect of SA20. I love it. I'm following it. So it's good.
Yeah. So the absolutely loving it was the predominant winner of our poll there, which is cool. And I know it's only the third season. And I know these names are from Indian teams.
Yeah.
But I feel these teams have a bit of identity to them.
100%.
I'm enjoying it. The weather's pissing on the parade a little bit, literally and figuratively. Yeah. Like I went last week Thursday to go watch Joburg Super Kings.
Oh, thank God I didn't go. It just got rained on.
It was a great first half. Hey? The moment the guys got to the actual wicket, it just started pissing down and that was it. So, I think SA20 has been going really, really great. I'm actually watching a game this weekend in Cape Town.
Oh, dope.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'll make an effort. I want to go watch my Cape Town, mostly because I haven't been to Newlands in so long.
Yeah. And they're giving it a bash. You know, we actually thought that, you know, they probably were going to be overrated again, but they're giving it a bash. And I'm actually super surprised that EC Sunrisers have had such a tough time in the tournament.
But you have come back.
Come back steaming.
Anyway, we'll get to like all that kind of stuff for the last part of the show here because obviously we're going to preview the weekend. But
yes, sir.
For our Clip Drift, that's gold moment of the week where we basically recap the most dynamic of performances or occasions in sport. I want to open up with Pirates unbeaten in the CAF Champions League group stages.
We said it. We said Pirates and Sundowns are going to make some noise, but I'm really surprised that Pirates did so well. And we said if they go to Al Ahly and get something, this is going to be big for them. So big shout out to Pirates. I never say it as a Chiefs fan, but that's huge. And shout out to my dad. I know you've been waiting for the shout out.
I love the fact that every time you come close to giving Pirates anything, you've got to give a shout out to your dad.
I've got to do it. And he watches every week, so he said, yo, you don't forget my shout out.
They go ahead.
My that's gold moment, and thank goodness I watched. It was probably one of the best games of tennis I've ever watched yesterday. It was Novak versus, you know, Carlos. Everybody thought this was it. And he got hurt whilst playing. So, Novak, please take it home now. Even though you do have a hard rain and you're going to have a hard run at it, but it looks like he's going to go for, you know, all the glory and go for the 25th.
It just seems like your guy, Alcaraz, isn't kicking on, huh?
He's 21. He's going to learn from all these.
He's been 21 for the last 3 years.
He is literally 21.
This like doesn't seem to age. He's
literally 21.
Okay. Or whatever Novak's doing, fountain of youth.
Yes.
He is. He's the absolute fountain of youth. But I think that's got to do with veganism and having lots of money for other stuff.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
And it works for him, not for everyone else.
Yeah, and I'm loving this whole new narrative of athletes beating father time. So I love it. Shout out to King Novak.
Well, Gael Monfils also.
Yeah.
38 years old.
So yeah, but he's made out of like elastics and rubber and stuff. He's just a physical phenom.
Yeah.
Okay, two fantastic moments for the week to go into this. But I'm going to say, Clip Drift, that's goal moment for the week. Damien Pernod, French.
Yes.
He scored 6 tries in one match against the Sharks.
Unreal.
So credit to him. I mean, the Sharks prolific, okay? Mm-hmm. Over the last 2 seasons, 43 games, 43 tries.
Right.
But I think this is another indication that the Sharks team is just vibes.
Yeah, we're going to get into that because I want to call out that, but we're going to get into that.
Flex, if you wouldn't mind just bringing up the team of the week from the Investec Champions Cup. You know, every week we try to get into this just to show a glimpse of it. Yep. The Heineken team of the week, this is the last time we'll see South Africans in it.
Ever.
We got Marcel Tiernissen and Cameron Hanekom, number 7 and 8 respectively. 2 young rising SA stars there. Otherwise, it is Damien and the rest of the Oaks from Europe. I watched the first 10 minutes of that game. I knew it was too good to be true for the Sharks. And they took 60. But it wasn't as bad as Leicester.
Jeez.
80 points. 80 piece.
DuPont and his mates, they scored 80.
80. They are really, look, they're going for it. They're tired of being called overrated. They said, let me give you that work. That was 80.
But, Darby, that was a full-strength Leicester team, huh?
Full-strength, and I mean Leicester Tigers, one of the stalwarts of European rugby. Mm. They've won it a couple of times, and to see them get 80 points, you don't see that often at that level.
80 is crazy because at the start of the second half to lose, we're actually like a bit more chilled. And then I stopped watching for 10 minutes. Like, wow, you guys are going back to points a minute.
Jeez, that was... Yeah, that was electric.
It was an ass-kicking. Yeah. All right, so as we're going to get more into the rugby, that is our show for the week. It's all about rugby. You know, I've wanted to get someone like Darby into the studio to really unpack stuff because as much as Sandile and I, we do love rugby. Darby actually was involved as a kid growing up. No, he wasn't a scrum off. He was a promising front rower. So he knows the structures of SA rugby, huge and knowledgeable. So after the break, we're going to get heavily into this. Catches then. That was a hard line to do.
With all our local teams now out of the Investec Cup, we've got the Sharks and the Bulls in the EPCR. I hope I got that right. That are in the Europa League of rugby. And the Lions were originally there at the Europa League of rugby. Please, can you guys break it down for me and explain what is the EPCR?
Darby, jump in whenever I get something wrong here.
Yeah. We'll do.
The incentive is to get into the top 8 because now you're in the Investec Champions Cup.
Cool.
Then the best, how many Oaks from England and France?
3 or 4.
So I think France have 4. I'm pretty sure that like the best Oaks from there, so the French top 14, the English Premiership.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're top from there. They all come together for the Champions Cup. Now, the Oaks are on the periphery of that, like the next tier of best Frenchies, mm-hmm. the next tier of SA Oaks. I mean, even the Cheetahs, they're in the EPCR Cup, okay? So they start there. Same with the Italians. All the Oaks didn't do so well in the URC, the top 14 in the English Premier League. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's how it goes. So think of it very much like a Champions League and Europa Cup.
Cool. Probably the best way to put it.
The thing that Man United play in.
Yes.
Europa Cup.
Go on.
So that's where we are. Cool. Flex, you might just bring up the slide about the Champions Cup because I can just give you an understanding of like where this all breaks down to now because now we're in the last 16.
Right.
Round of 16s.
Okay, so round of 16, this will all come back in April. Mm-hmm. So no SA teams there.
Yes,
no. It was quite rough that Toulouse didn't finish top. Like they killed everybody, mm-hmm. but now Bordeaux-Beglers. Because they've got Damien Pernod scoring all the tries, they actually finished top.
Yes.
But ultimately, the same thing happens, right? You finish top, you get your home round the next one. Cool. So that's the round of 16. Flex, go to the next slide, please, which is the EPCR Cup. As you can see, now our Oaks are involved.
There we go.
But because our guys came in late, they can't be one of the top seeds, so even though they were in a superior tournament prior to this. Top seed is who? Connacht. Okay,
Connacht.
They started, they kicked ass in the preliminaries. Mm. The Bulls, for example, they're coming in as 11th seed.
Yeah, they're at the bottom right.
Yeah, so they're now going to be playing away. It's the same with the Sharks. They're the 12th seed. They're going to be playing away. The Lions, what seed are they there, Darby?
The Lions are 14th.
Okay, so also not great. But then again, they weren't playing so great. So that's how it breaks down. These are our top 2 tournaments. Darby, I want to kick it off by asking you, is this current perspective of where we are with our money and all that kind of stuff, is it the worst thing that we're not just a token team in the last 16, that our 2 guys are in the EPCR Cup, and like the Sharks did last year, they can win it?
Listen, it is all to play for. As we were speaking, I don't think our team specifically view the Investec Cup and the EPCR as a lesser than tournament. I think when we delve into it, the logistical nightmare of what our teams have to go through in order to try and compete on both fronts is something that is really difficult. But having had the opportunity now to still try and win a trophy in Europe, which is something that's very prestigious. The Sharks showed what can happen last year. Yeah. I think it's still all to play for, but it is rather difficult. And as we'll go through later, when we look at the fixtures and how that lines up, it's not going to be easy, irrespective of who you play against now in the EPCL.
Okay, so when you say logistical nightmare, as we know, because of the structure of the URC being what it is, we have these little pockets of travel,
yes,
which suck, because in the past, I know I'm saying in the past here, like Super Rugby is a long time ago, actually.
It's actually a while ago.
It is. It's a really long time now. You would have like demarcated areas where there'd be decent pockets. So you're going to be touring for a month.
Yeah.
And if you're young oak, touring for a month is way better than back and forth.
Yep.
Yes.
Because you would go and you get it all out of your system. And you come back and then you get momentum. Yeah. So now you're going to be at home for 6 weeks. Great. I know where I'm going to be for the next 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
For a variety of lifestyle reasons, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So up and down, up and down, up and down. Now, we are going, so as we showed there, the Bulls and the Sharks and the Lions, they're all playing away.
Mm-hmm.
So round of 16. You got URC logistics, and now you got the EPCR Cup logistics as well. I don't see this being sustainable. I really don't. But at the same time, it's where we have to be. The question I ask now is that, are we at the stage where we're making money out of this yet? Because I know there was an equity kind of thing. Like, you've got to be in the tournament for a certain amount of time.
Yes.
And only then being here can actually reward this. Because I put the hard yards in, cool, but you got to get paid for it, though.
No, definitely. So when it comes to the Investec Cup, in terms of the agreement, from the third year, that's when we get equity. So in the second year of that agreement now, so from next year, we actually become shareholders within the Investec Cup.
So am I right in saying that to this point, then, we haven't actually been making really money from these tournaments?
Yeah, it's
we get a little bit out of the broadcast deal, surely.
Yeah, but it makes it very strenuous for the teams. I mean, from a flight perspective, from all those costs that you have to carry, that all goes into how the teams go about managing their budget. So just a little tidbit of what we're up against when we're going into Europe as an Investec Cup. I saw it on SA Rugby yesterday. So the annual salary cap for the top four franchises for this season, the 2024-2025, is 95 million rand. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of rand value, compared to Toulouse's budget...
Wait, hang a second. I'm gonna ask you questions on a shotgun approach here.
Yeah.
Who sets that? Is that because that's all we've got? Or is that what we're told?
No, that's the salary cap from what you're given in terms of the competition.
Okay.
The US.
So every team is...
Every team has a salary cap. Compared to Toulouse's, which is in rand value 973 million,
so they don't have a cap though.
Yeah, it's different in France. So it's different in all the various competitions.
Is that because the French are just playing by their own rules, or like, what's the story?
Related issues.
Well, I wouldn't be able to go or say much about that. But yeah, every league has their own set of rules which they have to comply by. I mean, you look at what happened in the Guinness Premiership, how many of those teams started folding. So a lot of emphasis is on sustainability.
Yeah. Right.
But you don't go into a sports team, not very few make money. But that is where there's strict rules in place in order to have that in terms of your budget. So from a South African perspective, I mean, you're up against it automatically. And as we discussed, Ben, when you're looking at Toulouse, Bordeaux, those guys can have the pool of players from all across the world. South Africa, we focus on the players that are in South Africa. And with that, you know, there's a select pool to choose from. And obviously, a lot of our players are going overseas as well. So then, when it comes from a playing standpoint, you've got players that are learning their stripes, players that are going through the hard yards of getting that experience, but you're playing against teams that are having full internationals coming off the bench. And that's where...
Yeah, it's kind of like playing the Springboks in a test match. It's like...
100%.
It's like, the Sharks.
It's weird, huh? It's actually coming back to bite us a bit now. It's like, all these guys are proper bomb squads.
100%.
And now we've got a team and replacements.
Yeah.
So when we now look at the last 16 of the EPCR, just to give context, so... The blocks for the round of 16 in the quarterfinals for the EPCR now is going to be played the round of 16, the 4th, 5th, or 6th of April. Then the following weekend is the quarterfinals, the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th of April. So if you look at the Bulls, you are away to Bayonne in France. The Sharks are away to Lyon. And then the Lions are away to Edinburgh. To give everyone perspective of the lead-up for those teams going into those knockout games, for the ERC, the Bulls, they play home to Leinster and home to Zebre on the 22nd of March and the 29th of March. Then they've got to go travel away to France to play that knockout game. Say they get through and beat Bayonne, they've got another away game in that bracket between the Lions and Edinburgh potentially.
And then they would stay for that week, right? You wouldn't go back, forth, back. Okay, cool. Gotcha.
And then they stay, and then they carry on from the 19th of April through to the 26th. They're away to Munster and away to Warriors. So if you're looking at it from a tournament perspective, the bread and butter for all South African teams is the URC. That's where you make your money. That's where, you know, you get pushed, and that's where, come the end of the season, you know, you feel validated about where you finish. But from a logistical standpoint, from the teams having to manage workload, from the coaches having to see who they're going to send players where, you start off in South Africa, you go away to France, then potentially Scotland, then you're away to the URC again, to Munster and the Warriors. And depending on where you are in the URC, what are you going to prioritize? And in between that is then the EPCR. So I don't think South African teams view this as... Some of our Northern Hemisphere counterparts still feel there's a level of arrogance when it comes to the South African teams of sending lesser teams. But at the end of the day, I think at the moment with the way it is and still getting used to it, these competitions are a nice to have.
Yeah, I think it's just to kind of, it's like you get the English people who are always moaning. We saw it in cricket, we spoke about it with Michael Vaughan. Yeah. Like the Stormers sent a less than perfect team to racing. Why? Because they're playing Leinster this week away.
Yes.
What's more important? You're out of the Investec Champions Cup already. Yep. But if you can get anything against Leinster, it's going to be it.
Yeah. And Dari, just before we jump back right in, I think for us as people, layman people, who are jumping into rugby, I think the historical context of all our franchising doing historically bad now is something that, you know, a timeline thing that I really want to get into. You know, we've had the Blue Bulls, the Sharks, and the Stormers, who were super dominant in Super Rugby, and the Lions to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Now moving into the European element of rugby, is there, as you know, the European leagues are saying, there is an arrogance, but these franchises aren't broke. You know, this is the same franchise that brought back Sia from '92. Mm-hmm. His salary is not very cheap. So, you know, I hear the argument of saying that, you know, the financial discussion is big, but these are franchises who initially knew that they were going to have this traveling, who have signed up for the traveling. Mm. And do you feel like, and it's a question that I want to ask, there's a lack of preparation in terms of team depth, because naturally our franchises have always been, their biggest focus is flooding the Springboks with talent. And now you've got the new globalization of rugby where a big contingent of players who aren't going into necessarily their international teams are now recruiting players to make a full-on career in the European scene. We've seen Hajiva gone do it himself, Daimani. He's not going to be a Springbok, but he said, let me go make legit money in sure. France. So is there a lack of the globalization in terms of our franchises to meet, you know, the new franchising standard in Europe? I know it's a mouthful.
No, 100%. And I understand.
Sorry, I'm rubbing off on you with a long question.
I understand where you can come from with that. I think... When it comes to economics, I mean, you've got to take into account that the rand is what it is, and you're competing against the yen, now Japan as well. That's becoming a force for club rugby, for players going 100%. Across. You're competing against the euro, and you're competing against the pound. So that's always going to be the case. I don't think it's a necessary lack of planning. I just think with having access to the Investec Cup now, previously, we were absolved for 1 year whilst we were integrating ourselves into the URC. And Jake White actually said it a couple of years ago, is the fact that you're going to need a big squad. But with a big squad comes financial obligations. It's not just about getting anyone. You want to add value to the squad. So you can have a squad of 35, 40. But at the end of the day, is that squad going to be able to perform mostly and then be able to sustain that performance across a calendar year when you're competing against the historic Toulouses, Bordeaux, Northampton Saints, Sale Sharks, Saracens, Leinster's. I mean, you look at Leinster, they brought across Jordy Barrett. They got Arches Neyman. So now all of a sudden, they're competing and they've got the base from which they already started from. And we will get there, but we were started from a base of, I wouldn't say zero, but...
No, I get you. I think that's a good fundamental thing to keep an eye on. Just within, Sandile, just to kind of go on back to your question there about professionalism and those kind of things, I've got two questions around this.
Yeah.
Firstly, are our coaches a little bit cucker than we maybe think? Because we've seen guys like Franco Smit go off to Italy. Now he's the Glasgow Warriors coach. He's doing amazing things. URC winners last year. Some coaches can get a tune out of a team. Now, I don't want to point fingers here, but I will. The Sharks. There's a lot of things that add up with that team, right? A lot of people have misgivings towards John Plumtree. Sure, he's a legacy kind of oak. He knows the place well. Clearly, it's Mark's Durban. But do you think that maybe, as much as we are always fixating on player workloads, we're fixating all these kind of things, do you reckon our coaching structures maybe actually need a bit of a revision? And would it be such a bad case to go, I know Plumtree is foreign, but maybe there's time for maybe a European kind of look at how we do these things?
I think that definitely is a point worth noting. I think when it comes to the coaching aspect, we've got so many talented players in South Africa, but so many talented coaches as well. It's about creating a pathway and sustainable pathway. And what I mean by that is, can a coach who knows they may not be able to play professionally, a youngster, can they see a pathway where they can go to their local club and from their local club have a pathway into a professional structure? That's one thing. Two, with a results-driven business, coaches like in football, like in American football, basketball, name any professional sport in the world, you're not given the time to be able to
see.
You're fired or hired. You're not given the able time to be able to instill the sort of structures that you can put in place and have that can become a success. So now all of a sudden, you may result to a default. It may not be your way of playing, but it's winning rugby. And all of a sudden, that can compromise who you are, can compromise what you're able to do, because it is a results-driven business. And then from there, you've got to then look elsewhere. And kudos to the coaches that have. Franco Smit, look at what he's done, starting off in Italy, and then now what he's doing at Glasgow Warriors. So,
okay, so
it's so difficult.
Second part of that question, and I'm not looking for definite answers here, but because we're so fixated about what we don't have, which is a common human trait.
Yes.
Now, we know South Africans are great exports, okay? And if you look at English Premier League teams, they've had these academies for quite some time now, right? And Man United were great when they were really amazing, as you know, back in the days, the Beckham years, Scholes, Giggs, all those. They were great because they didn't pay a cent for them as well. It was beautiful. Academy teams, bring up.
Yep.
So you mentioned Diamani, right?
Yep.
Did the Stormers make much money out of that? If we're developing talent and we're doing really well with it and they're going to play these top teams, are we making bank out of this?
You're not going to be making, or clubs aren't going to be making the sort of money that, for example, an English transfer would have.
But in like relative terms, are we making enough money to then go, we're a bit light in the loose forwards? Not that it ever happens. Say we're a bit light in like second rowers. Let's get this oak from Scotland or Wales or Italy or France or wherever.
I don't think we can get to a situation like that at the moment. I mean, I'm not well versed specifically on the financial aspects of all the unions, but a lot of the unions aren't making the sort of money that people, I think, have in mind, where they can just go and get anyone that they want.
So again, okay, I'm going to cut in there for example. I'm not saying this is what should happen. Devin Willemse, massive star, right?
Yeah.
Huge name in world rugby. Do we not kind of weigh it up? And again, Stormers, do not do this because let's keep him.
Your trade value.
But if his trade value is through the roof, and we've already got a guy like Warwick Hallant who's in form, and we've got Sasha who can play anywhere in the back line, Marnie will play 10, sometimes you look and go, I got a bit of value here, and make a business call. I would like to know if that's even a conversation right now with these teams.
I bet it is. I bet it is something that they look at, particularly if they're looking at the salary and they're looking at, you know, investment into the future. Sometimes you do have to, I wouldn't say cut your losses, that's the wrong term, but you have to look at exactly what you said. But I just don't think in rugby it's as easy and as straightforward as that, because you've got to look at where the player wants to go. You've got to look at, okay, what is the possibility of those clubs attracting him and wanting to pay what you want and what they are willing to pay. I think there's just so many nuances that go into that it's... It's difficult just to go, okay, he's on the transfer market. Here we go. There's no set transfer market within rugby where you go, okay, you know, the month of January now in the Premier League.
Here's our window.
Yeah. And I think that makes things a tad more complicated and a tad more messy.
I think, you know, and this is from pure outsider looking in, and especially with the Sharks, because you would think, as you know, as our South African minds do, because they probably have the most Springboks in their team, they're probably going to be as highly successful. I think the humbling thing is to see how they got beat. They got really beaten this weekend.
That was like schoolyard beat. That was like call your parents beat.
Schoolyard beat. And Davi, for me, the question I want to ask you, especially now because we're in the international scene in terms of our franchise rugbys, is are South African franchises too reliant now on their Springbok front lines or their Springbok players holistically? Because we're seeing that as great as those Springbok players are for the national team, it's not translating on a franchise level. And these are marquee players who...
But this is to my point about the coaching. Yeah. Is it not translating because our coaching structures aren't that great?
Oof. So much to unpack there. No, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, this is what bugs me. And I know it's a difficult question, but I feel your pain. What you just said there, okay? The Oaks that run on for the Springboks and get it done are running on for our club teams, and sometimes they're taking up complete PK.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you look at what happened to some of our best scrummages the last couple of weekends. I mean, it's not often that you see Ox and Franz Malherbe going backwards in a scrum. And I mean, they're some of my favorite people as a front row alliance. You know, it's not nice. But I think when it comes to, for example, the box that go and play in the various franchises, I think the season is truly year-round now. With all that we had going on and traveling back in the old days of Super Rugby, at least the players had somewhat of an off-season where end of November through to January, that was their off-season. The rest, and from a load management, you can monitor it like that. Now, all of a sudden, everything is year-round. You're going from the highs of the Springboks, where it truly is a world-class system. And I'm not saying that's not the case at their franchises, but you're going from the highs and lows of international rugby. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to go play at 35 degrees weather in Durban against a team from one of the URC competitions. 3 o'clock kickoff, 5 o'clock kickoff. That's not easy. So that plays into its part. And all of a sudden, you're not going into the same structures. You may be asked to play a different role. You may be asked to play a different way of playing than what you've just been used to with the Springboks, where you're away for 3 months, where there's certain values and certain structures. And so I think there's just so much that goes into it. And then, of course, you look at it from a coaching standpoint, which you alluded to. For example, the Bok players, they, depending on their contract, but they've got to have 8 weeks during a season where they've got to be managed. Yep. They've got to be off.
Yep.
So now, do you give someone full 8 weeks? I don't think that's feasible. So now they may have 2 weeks here. They may have 3 weeks here. You look at someone like the Sharks, where they've got 8, 9, 10 contracts.
It's a schedule to work, huh?
Then, not to bring it back to the scheduling aspect of the teams, but now you're looking to plan, you're looking to maximize who you've got, when you've got them, and now you've got to play a game here, you've got to send a team early over there, and all of a sudden, all of those things in complain. And I think that's where the coaches truly have it so difficult, because there's so much that goes into that, and ultimately, you go take a 60-point drubbing. The Bulls losing away at Saracens. They also sent a lesser team based upon all these things that we're speaking about. And now all of a sudden you're on the hot seat. You're under pressure. Fans, we're all subjective.
Sure. Well, if it came across as being derogatory towards any coaches previously, I take it all back.
I don't envy them. What they have to do on a weekly basis. And then I think don't overlook egos as well. You've got to manage a player as well. You've got to manage where they are in their career. You've got to manage all of a sudden a youngster is a Springbok. They're getting everything thrown at them, and now you're only human as well. So now you've got a collective, and they've just, as I said, come back from the Springboks. Now they're coming back into our franchises and vice versa. And how does that work?
And I think I just wanted to pose it to the both of you. Do you think our franchises have a major obsession with building Springboks outside of the success of their franchises? Because I think now we're currently looking at, you know, all our teams being super obsessive about building Springboks. And then when you get the Springbok in the system,
that's a good question.
Then you've got 8 weeks where you've kind of got to fit them in to the system. It's outside of, you know, I'm going to put it in a football term, where you've got Chelsea, who've got 150 players in their team for issues exactly like this. And I just wanted to bring it back on that level.
Well, I'll start on that. I think in the past it was always a pride thing. Yep. When you look at your provincial team, okay, historically speaking, if you look at SA Rugby, it was always Western Province and the Bulls as two things. Like, who had the most Springboks? It was always a pride thing. Yep. And it would be great to have that. Yep. I think franchises are now looking at, like, if a guy becomes a Springbok, awesome. It's a nice acknowledgement about what you are. But I think these Oaks are just desperate to have the most frontline kind of players, just to be firing as those guys. Because a firing Springbok, because, like, I think we get so caught up in the moment.
Yeah.
Granted, it's because we're drinking as fans. Yep. But we get so caught up in the moment how perfect a Springbok thing is. We all go to the games, we cheer, we expect excellence. Then you watch franchise and go, this is a step down. But it's like, it's impossible to have that intensity. Yep. It's like watching a Marvel movie and then watching just like a rom-com. You know, they're that far apart. The effort's there. The intention's there. You can't have the same product, though.
I think from a structural standpoint, and kudos to what SA Rugby, what Rossi and them have got, I think our franchises are more aligned with one another and with the top-down structure than they ever have been. But with that, again, you still have individual unions that are powerful, that have a voice, that obviously look after their own players and have their own interests at heart. But it's how you go about mirroring that. And I think that's where, if you look at the macro view, the season as a whole, from your player standpoint, how tricky that is, because there is, again, it's 12 months in the year. You go from the URC to the Investor Cup or the EPCR, then it's fast approaching the Springbok alignment camp, so all your Springboks are gone there. They don't get any time off. Then you've got the incoming test series. Then you come back. Then you've got Curry Cup. Then you go through to the Rugby Championship. And then all of a sudden you go again. Then your URC starts here at the end of August, September. Then you go into your international tour. So there's no quick answer. I think the challenges are just that much more. But I do think there's solutions, but everyone is still finding their feet on how they go about addressing all of this within a truly 12-month playing season.
I just wanted to ask, just from the two of you guys, because you guys have really been watching, you know, the Investor Cup, in terms of European tactics compared to our tactics, is there a major key thing that you guys picked up on how they play outside of how our franchises play? You know, we've been talking about coaching strategies. Is there something that you're seeing the European franchises do that, you know, a great Sharks team, because we can't take away how great they are, to get beat 66-12, is something that we probably haven't seen in a while, for them to be glaringly outclassed? Is there a tactical thing that you guys picked up that the general European teams are doing?
Look, this is absolutely more a question for Dobby, but what I will say,
yes.
what I will say from an outsider's perspective is that our Oaks seem to play a lot more on vibes. I know I mentioned it already, but you do, like, it's either on or it's not, and there's a big thing with them. I remember, Davi, we were there at the game, was it Northampton versus the Bulls?
Yeah.
The Bulls were like, it's Loftus, we're going to dick you Oaks.
Yeah.
Those Northampton Oaks,
jammed.
They just seemed to play within themselves, they did the basics a little bit better, it's all those little tiny increments. Mm-hmm. The team who were the favourites then get frustrated, they make a couple of stupid mistakes. Suddenly you let in a try, let in a penalty, before you know it, you've lost the game by 8 points. And I think that stands out for me in those kind of games.
100%. I think, again, at that level, coaching is what it's going to be in terms of, I think they're all really good coaches at that level. It's just about what you're able to do with the players that you have. And for longer periods, look at the French teams of Toulouse and Bordeaux. They're structured. They've got a prolonged period where their players, they don't have to worry about potentially having rest periods here and there or thrown in. So they're a lot, you can see they're a lot more settled. And I think that goes back to coaches that are feeling settled. They understand what's needed from them. They understand what's required. And also, a lot of their games, and again, not to hop on about the traveling schedule, but it's so much easier to go from point A to point B for them. Oh, yeah. They play the odd game in South Africa. This year, DuPont, it was the first time that he played in South Africa.
Got that sun.
Although I'm pretty sure they weren't crying about visiting Cape Town during that period of the year. So, again, I just think there's so much that goes into it from a team perspective and how settled they are. Again, constantly South African teams are looking at the schedule. They're looking at, okay, we're playing this person. So are we going to take this game seriously? And then we know the next game, potentially, there's going to be a drop-off. Or do we keep 10 of our starting 15 here? We're going to send the rest of the other five starting 15 with the other group, and they're going to go a week earlier to prepare for games.
It's almost like being a guy with a polyamorous relationship. Like, which kids do I like the most? Like, you know, when you come here,
experience
going
is there, Ben. I'm not quite sure I know what that is, but
but that's what it sounds like. It's like you can't be just that guy. You've got to be all kinds of things.
You've got to be a jack of all trades, particularly from the South African team.
So
you can't hone down and go, this is the tournament and this is what we're going to do, because ultimately you are based on your performances. You can't not take it seriously, but it's about where you draw that fine line.
Yeah.
And what that means for your team and what that means for managing expectations more than anything.
I want to ask just a question for the two of you guys in terms of your individual teams. Do you want to see more international players? They can be superstars, or if they can be tier two, let's call them tier two players. Do you want to see more of an international scale in terms of in terms of your team?
Get,
you want to see more Fijians and Ewart?
Get them, bring them.
Do you want to see that, or are you happy with us bringing in and try take off your South African, you know, hats on this? Do you think there's merit in bringing in more international players that are creeping into their, you know, their super rugby teams, their, you know, at that level? Because we're seeing it now that the traditional powerhouses of rugby and their franchises, they're lagging behind because of what Europe is doing. And now we've seen even New Zealand playing with the idea of, we're going to open up, you know, getting international players in. So from a franchise perspective, do you want to see more international players coming in their prime, not a Carlos Spencer?
Yeah, completely. I mean, totally. I think what we've discussed already in the show so far shows that we've got problems, and how do you create solutions with a few different ideas, right?
Yeah.
You can't all have the Oaks wanting to be the next Cameron Hunnicorp.
Yeah.
You can't have all these Oaks that want to be the next Mornay Steyn. They've got a certain like way of looking at things.
Yeah.
You bring in a hunky Welsh Oak that doesn't mind getting a bit hammered on a Wednesday, and he's
on Long Street.
Like, you bring in some cultural kind of things like this. Every now and again, there's been guys that love coming to this country and they've had a bit of a spark. The Sharks back in the 90s were very cosmopolitan like that with some Frenchies.
Yeah.
A little bit of that will absolutely help. But I think also just for like touring here, let's keep it interesting.
Yeah.
No, I mean, selfishly as a spectator, I'd love to see, you know, more players come and enter our space. But I think it's just a testament to South African rugby. We've got an endless conveyor belt of rugby players coming through the schoolboy system. We must have probably the strongest schoolboy system in the world, where it's just a conveyor belt of players coming through the system. So, yeah, I think.
But Davi, I mean, to that point, though, if we've got some foreigners in positions, then that conveyor belt's got to push extra hard to get them out. And if those Oaks are professionals, which they obviously will be, imagine you've got this big sign and you can't get a game because this youngster is now so good. It looks great on the youngster. It's great in the team. And the foreign professional knows he's got to give more to that team. Competition's a beautiful thing. It really is. I think we have to look at these kind of things going forward. And I'm all for it. I think it'd be an interesting kind of thing to look at.
Definitely. Iron sharpens iron.
Yes.
And there's a lot to be said for that sort of model. But whilst, again, those sorts of overseas players, when they're competing and they're getting the offers that they are, it's just about whether South African teams can put something together that's going to entice them to be able to enter their prime into the teams that we have here.
So, Davi, final question on our general sort of rugby chat here. In your mind, what would constitute a ideal, perfect season from a South African rugby perspective?
Continue focusing, as I said earlier, your bread and butter, which is the URC.
Yep.
I think we've got to continue to push as many of our teams to be in the top eight positions, which is the playoffs. And ultimately, your top eight positions go into the Investec Cup. And then from there, you know, if you do get that, then talking from an Investec Cup standpoint, I think make a run. I think it's so important. Those first two games of the pool stages are so important, because if you're behind the eight ball from the get-go, I think, as we've seen this year, a lot of teams start waning off and start focusing on the URC. But for me, a URC winner, at least a semi-finalist year in, year out, and so far we've been fortunate to have that through the strength of our teams, and then pushing into Europe and slowly building a fan base and building a building block to be able to push.
Okay, so you want things to stay as they are, basically, what you're saying.
I think it's the best option there is at the moment in terms of what's available. I don't think there's too much more room you can tinker with the schedule. So again, I think the more the South African teams are in this, the more they're able to get used to it, to find their feet, and to be able to plan in different ways going forward. I think that's the name of the game.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a slight curveball on this. I reckon we should toss this Investec Champions Cup completely. Okay. Because it also keeps you guys guessing when the box play against England, France, and Ireland. Oh, they're not Ireland because they know us through URC. But keep you guys guessing. Let's not go near these French guys. Give them this perception that they're incredible, and then we dick them in the green jersey. Guys, we need to get into the URC.
Good, let's get straight into it.
As I feared, we could be talking to Derby for years about rugby here.
100%.
Flex, you want to just bring us the graphic there? Okay, so the URC is back in action, and I'm excited about this because I get momentum. The top eight right now, Leinster, who I've said a couple episodes ago, they're going to win everything this year because Ireland aren't going to win the Six Nations.
Oh, we're getting to that.
They're nine from nine. I mean, that's pretty incredible. That's defending champs Glasgow are coming back in second place. They're 10 points back in second. Then we've got Cardiff, who are going to fall away. They're in third. The Bulls. Now, Dav, your team there, they've played two less games than the top Oaks there, and they're on 25 points. So they're going to be thereabouts the whole way through. They'll make a bit of a kick. The Sharks come back in the tournament in fifth place, so they're still looking all right.
Minus five.
And then the Stormers, the Lions, they're all second half of that. I mean, the Stormers are what? They are...
Feeling like Man United. Sorry, had to.
Sorry, Stormers fans. Sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. But yeah, they're on that sort of second half there. I mean, look, Leinster are going to be strong the whole way through. You would imagine that a team like Munster might come back here. The Glasgow Warriors have shown the Bulls. Would you say that the Bulls would be our only chance, really, to kind of win this thing? Or am I just being a little bit too partisan towards your team?
Maybe a tad pessimistic. I think the Sharks have shown that... they can fluctuate in form, but when they're on, and they are one of the strongest teams in the competition. And the Lions, I mean, the sort of rugby that they've been playing this year with a fraction of the talent base. So amazing kudos to the structures there and the coaching team and the players as a whole. So I genuinely think there's three teams that can make inroads. When it comes to the playoffs and, you know, the latter stages.
So you're saying nothing for the Stormers?
Absolutely nothing, Chaz.
The Stormers have pulled an Arsenal here. They've got out of the cup so they can focus on the league.
That's the gamble. Come on, you know it's not going to pay off.
Stormers currently in 10th, right? And there's none of this cup nonsense we spoke about here. They're going to be in Cape Town. They're going to be jawling. They could make a real push in the second half here.
Definitely.
I guess I should put my bias aside. Of course, the Stormers were the team that North South derby is strong. I think, of course, they've got an unbelievable team as well. They've had vicious injuries to key players. If they can get healthy, of course they can go on a run. They've shown it. They've won the competition. Mm-hmm. They've been in two finals, so the pedigree is there. But definitely. Oh. But I don't know if they've left it a little bit too late in order to make a serious run.
Win them all now, basically.
Because that's the thing. I mean, it's one thing getting the top eight, but then you're playing away. Yeah. You want to get top four.
Exactly.
You want to be a top four in this. Okay, Six Nations starts next weekend.
Mm.
So boom.
You said some very audacious things.
Look, I'm excited about the Six Nations. If you go into any sort of betting site, these are the odds that we're going to have here. Ireland and France are kind of joint favorites. Yeah. You can't really pick much between the two. England are third favorites, but we just saw these Oaks just don't know how to win the big games anymore. they've just proved it for 2 years in a row now. But they can come out and they can beat Ireland
and France.
But the thing is, you need to go through a whole tournament, as you know. Yeah. Scotland are then kind of the fourth favorites, don't have enough players. They've just lost their...
And Tutulopu, they just lost their captain.
Sorry, I'm not very good with Scottish names. You have to say that again. And then obviously Wales, complete dog shit, and Italy haven't got a hope in hell. Derby, the way I look at it is, as I said, Leinster haven't won anything for a while. Mm-hmm. It's been a few years. For a top team, it's basically a while.
Yes.
They've done really great so far in the two cups, or the three things you spoke about, URC and Basic Champions Cup. This French team, though, I know there's a lot of smoke burning up their asses, but they kind of dealt everybody last year in that end-of-year tour.
Yeah.
They were dominant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ireland do have a bit of an advantage. They play France and England at home during the Six Nations because it always just sways in the fixture list, right? It's not a home and away thing.
No.
You play the Oaks, it fluctuates from there.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a big enough edge to give them that sole favourites tag?
Definitely. I think they've got the most settled team. If I look at the fixtures here, yeah, as you correctly said, they start off with England, then they away to Scotland, then away to Wales, and then those that game to France at home. So, again, I think they've got the most settled team. One side note is with Andy Farrell heading over to the British and Irish Lions, you've got the interim head coach, Simon Easterby. You've got Caelan Dorris coming back. He's the new captain. But the two things that stand out for me is Dan Sheehan coming back from injury. When he's on song, one of the best hookers, and adds so much grunt and so much mongrel to that Ireland front row. And then James Lowe coming back. I mean, sometimes it looks as though he's running in quicksand, but the man just knows to be in the right position. But it still goes. They've got the most settled squad, and they're playing the two biggest games at home, which is massive.
Yeah, those are two really big things. I just, this is not me hype training. I just think DuPont is that good.
Oh, come on.
And I think players have become quite used to playing around him now and the brilliance. Because sometimes you get a star player in a team, he's not great from a team aspect. But just, obviously, we've all been watching more of Toulouse now. I'm not saying the Toulouse team is obviously the French team because it's quite international. But just how that team clicks, how it works, how he fires things around him. And, you know, he's a little bit lighter now from the sevens. There's another little element to his play from between last year and this year. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also one of those things, it's like that stuff mounts up. Like, you've got to win everything now. In the past, he was always great.
Yeah.
But now it's like, well, fuck, we didn't win the Six Nations last year. Didn't win the World Cup. This is the year. So I'm going all in France, if you've picked that up between the lines there.
I initially had Ireland as outright favourites, but for me, the coach changing and him focusing on the on the tour is a big factor, because they aren't, as you said, the most settled team now. You've got France, who've had a great autumn season.
Oh, they are the most settled squad as far as players you have played.
Coaching is major thing. France have had a great autumn series, and now they're going into it, you know, post Olympics. I know people don't really rate that. And you've said DuPont is here to prove it, because he has to live something at an international level. He needs to feel like that he has to beat a great Ireland team. So I think that is something that they're going to put a lot of pride into. Ireland, look, we also have to respect the fact that they know how to win at a big level. They've done it two times.
You got to say often, Ireland, we've got to respect the fact, because none of us actually like those.
I
like Irish people. Yeah,
team. We hate to respect the fact, but they're back-to-back champions. And the big X factor in this whole Six Nations theme is, who is England going to beat, and who are they going to ruin, you know, title hopes? Because that's what happened last year.
I reckon exactly. They are that cock block team for somebody.
You know, they ruined Grand Slams. They ruined stupid
things. They ruined Ireland's Grand Slam last year when they lost.
Exactly.
To go into your point, I think, remember last year in the Six Nations, DuPont went to focus on the sevens.
Yes.
So he wasn't there. And I think that plays a massive thing. And like France, where a lot of their team is made up of Bordeaux and Toulouse players. Ireland, 23 of their 36 players that they've picked up from Leinster.
Mm. Yeah.
So you look at that cohesion, you look at the last couple of games with Leinster, and I'll bring it back to Ireland now, my point that I'm trying to make, how Jacques Nabre and his defence and how Leinster have taken to that. Yeah. Is that going to be a factor with those players coming in? Simon Easterby, the interim head coach, is their defence coach. But will there be a bit of help? Will there be a bit of communication there between him and Jacques Nienaber? And then you look at, again, the French teams, just the pure domination that they've had this year, that sort of rugby that they're playing. Yeah. I mean, both Toulouse and Bordeaux on the top try scorers, they're in the top points. One outstanding thing that you may not realize with Toulouse is their tackle success rate. So the French in the last couple of years have really prided themselves on their defense. So I think that game between Ireland and France, I think that will determine again, like last year.
That's like World Cup final stuff. Yeah. Well, not really, but I mean, let's just be nice to them.
Let's take away the bias. And I think, look, Ireland's pursuit of a historic treble is going to be huge for them as well.
100%.
Yeah, for me, that's also a big key, because, you know, this is something they really got to... You know, it's not a World Cup, but this is something huge.
Well, since it got expanded in 2000, like you correctly said, they're looking to become the first team to win it three times in a row.
It's great, guys. You can win it 23 times in the way. Still four
give
behind.
Them something. Give
still
them something, Ben.
But also, the French Oaks aren't worrying about a British and Irish Lions tour. That's the last point I'm going to add to that. Yeah. Cohesion, right? Momentum. Exactly. structures.
And they've not had the sort of injuries that a lot of the teams have had, from your England to your Ireland and to your Scotland specifically.
Absolutely better managed. Alrighty.
Before we move.
Yes.
Any surprise packages that you think you'll see in the Six Nations?
I honestly, I honestly think England are going to make a noise. I don't, you know, a lot of the people are thinking they finished third, probably fourth. I'm thinking they could sneak a second, just because of the way their games are lining up. It's all dependent upon those first couple of fixtures. Mm. First couple of fixtures for England. They start off at Ireland, but they play France at home, they play Scotland at home, and they play Italy at home. So they've got three home fixtures in this cycle of Six Nations. So,
and also, like, Wales away is not really going to be the most taxing.
Wales away. So it wouldn't surprise me if, coming down to it, they can have a major impact on not only who wins it between France and Ireland, or potentially themselves sneaking in.
Oh, love it, huh? I've never been this excited about the Six Nations.
Big take, I like it.
Never been excited.
Big take.
All right, talk about more big takes. We can come back after the break with what's happening this weekend in the sports, because another big weekend of football.
You're an asshole.
Up the Arsenal.
Oh, wow.
All righty, into the next sporting weekend. It is the, second last weekend of Jan?
Yep.
Because it's 31st of Friday. Not important.
Just go for it.
Big weekend of sport coming up as usual. This one's really cool because, along with the rugby, the cricket and the football, we have the crux of the Australian Open.
Yes.
The first Grand Slam of the season. Sandile's guys are already out because, let's be honest, he doesn't have the minerals.
Look.
But Yannick Sinner, defending champ, world number one Yannick Sinner, he's still there. He's going to be fighting against a guy called playing in the semis. And then we've got Djokovic, Zverev, the other semi in the men's there.
Yep.
Ideally, the Sinner-Djokovic finals, I think the one everybody wants.
Yes.
Yeah, and then what happens to Sinner afterwards? He gets the Man City treatment because he juices, and then Novak gets the title no matter which way it goes. Joking.
You're so hard on that guy.
No, Mitch. I think for me, look, Djokovic, you know, a lot of people were either Federer or, you know, who's the other Nadal guys.
I was always Djokovic.
Djokovic is really showing us that class is permanent. That was a tough game that he played against, you know, Carlos Alcaraz. He went down 6-6-3, 6-4 in the first set and got hurt.
Yep.
But then dominated for the rest of the game. And he made Carlos Alcaraz make a lot of mistakes. And that was an amazing game. He also wished that it was the final. So I really hope that he goes into the finals and wins his 25th. And even crazier, this is his 50th semi-final.
No, it's a joke. Do you think, with the form that he's showing now, and again, we spoke about the Fountain of Youth, recently changed coaches, Andy Murray, do you think that's played a part in maybe adapting to the new age, the Sinners, the Zverevs, the Tsitsipases, all these sort of bombers coming into...
I thought it was a master play, because the last 5 or 6 years, Andy, the only focus of Andy is about what he doesn't have.
Yeah.
He's playing all these youngers with injuries. He's getting lapped by the field. Yeah. He'll be having the best insights for Novak. It's like, fuck, I wish I had that. I wish I could do that. I think it's a great, inspired choice. But that just goes to show what an absolute great he is.
100%.
To have the vision to have to go, this guy used to be my opponent, I think right now, good thing for him.
And they had historic finals as well.
You absolutely. Know?
So I think getting into ahead of an opposition player, such a step up for you know, a true competitor like Djokovic. So that was amazing. And you could see throughout the game how he would defer to Andy Murray to say, like, what am I doing wrong? And then he would give him, you know, the key. So that's going to be big.
That's what I just love about Novak. So, Sandile, I mean, we got to chat about this in our prep, obviously. Mm. I want to do an episode, the greatest sportsman of all time, because it can't be a team sport. So easy on you LeBron James fans over there. The greatest the greatest sports person of all time.
We're already going to get into a fight.
Tiger versus Djokovic. I want to have an episode just on that.
And then we've got to throw in Serena.
No Jordan?
Oh, yeah, can't be team.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Fine. We'll work out the rules on that.
We'll iron out the prep. We're not doing prep here for the show. I mean, sorry about that. Yeah. Women's Aussie Open. I obviously want, I think everyone does, Sabalenka versus Swiatek. I want that as a final.
Yeah, but what was crazier for me in the Women's Open was to see Coco bomb out the way she did.
That was surprising.
41 unforced errors.
Yeah, but we know
Coco's. She had such a great tournament till the 41 unforced errors. Every time, Coco. And
She's a bit of a pro tier, let's be honest.
But also, what's a great story is Paulo Barbosa,
yeah.
Who was contemplating retirement.
Yes.
and then came and, you know, and balled out. So
great
that's,
move. Play, that's possum, play possum.
Play opposition. Possum, like Novak did, and just say, gotcha.
But I guess that's the beauty of the women's draw is, I mean, for a long time, the men's, you could pretty much set on who's going. And when Serena left, the beauty of the women's draw is, there's always a top 20, top 30 player that comes and makes
We spoke about this in a previous episode. Yeah. It's just like herding cats. Yeah. Like,
even
to pick
this little window that Sabalenka got, you never know if it's going to happen for long. Yeah.
All right, guys. So UFC was last week. URC this weekend, whole host of fixtures. Everything is back. Big games to look out for there. Glasgow are taking on Connacht. That'll be Friday night at 9:35. Lions versus Bulls. If you're brave enough to go to Hillbrow, then you're in for an absolute tri-fest, I'm sure. That'd be 2:45 SA time.
Brave enough.
Leinster versus the Stormers, Saturday at 7 o'clock. That's all SA time I'm giving you here. That's a real big one. Cardiff will be hosting the Sharks.
Is it really big or is it just a butcher?
It'll be the Stormers' first team.
Oh, it's just going to be Stormers are
URC specialists here. That's all they got.
Okay, let's go with that.
I think it's going to be a lot closer than what people think.
Really? Exactly, yeah. Exactly. They've been there. They're prepping. Cardiff are hosting the Sharks at 7:15. Then that's pretty much it. Sandile, it is the Nedbank Cup round of 32 this weekend.
Yes, sir.
I know it's not the biggest thing, round of 32. Because
a lot of random games, but we'll take it. We've got Sundowns versus Golden Stars at 6 o'clock. We're expecting Sundowns to win, but you never know with the Nedbank Cup.
Sundowns pissed me off last weekend. I was watching that CAF Champions League game, and I was thinking, win this game, because then Pirates will be the only unbeaten team. And the last 20 minutes, it was like it was match fixing.
Yep.
They were playing the ball back to the goalkeeper. They were just fucking around.
Weird, right?
I've never heard Loftus so quiet. And then ASFAR score the equaliser, and they're like, so what?
But remember, we did say it's a new regime in Sundowns, so they're gonna have these problems in Africa, you know?
Narcolepsy.
They're going to have these problems in CAF.
Stop playing.
Yeah, so Sunday, sorry, it was the Sundowns game's on Saturday, guys. Yes. Yep. Sunday, we've got Richards Bay versus Orlando Pirates. As we've been saying about Orlando Pirates, first of all, they are a tournament team, but they have been playing historically great football this season. Yep. So I expect that to be a complete.
Shout out to your dad.
Whitewash, Musa Shanga says, shout out to you. Chiefs versus free agents.
Yes.
Look, we hope, as Chiefs fans, nothing exciting. The reason I say we hope is that I have watched Chiefs lose to a second division team, first division team in this tournament. So they've got to go win this game. If not, more boos will rain. I saw recently this week, Kaiser Jr. had to make a statement saying, we really are not trying to hurt you fans. We are playing for you, Kaiser Jr. Please, make sure my guys win. And then we've got Skukune versus Cape Town City. That's also going to be an exciting game on Monday at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, those are your sort of big ones. I mean, obviously, as these tournaments, just like in the FA Cup, there's a couple of interesting games. The names are quite funny. I mean, Free Agents is quite a name.
Yeah.
Horror in the transfer window, these are exciting.
I mean, like, what a team name. Ungovernable.
All right, so we got the English Premier League as usual.
We can't skip this.
We're going to bring the table up here just to kind of show you who the top teams are. Those are your top eight. Graphics look good, huh? What do you think?
Beautiful.
I'm asking you. From, like, this is our show. Look how cool our graphics look. Yeah. So Liverpool, of course, they're up there, game in hand, and they lead by 6 over the mighty Arsenal.
How are you going to throw it mighty?
I mean, they've only lost twice.
Okay.
So that's pretty good. Nottingham Forest still clinging on there. They level with Arsenal in third. Goal difference has fucked them a little bit.
Chris Wood.
They've lost two extra games. Then we've got Chelsea. They've come back after their summer break where they just took a bit of a sleep. So that's your top four. Man City resurgent. They're doing the big scores again against the teams.
That's what I was going to say. I think the big scare now is Pep getting back into it.
Has his divorce gone through?
And apparently it's gone through.
Okay, then that's another sweep up out of the way.
Moving with these shoulders loose now. He had to just deal with the divorce settlement. You know Pep is going to go on a deep run, and teams cannot afford to drop points. And that's my biggest issue with that team that's at number two and that team that's number three. So I'll leave it at that.
All right, okay. Well, Newcastle's still hanging on. Bournemouth, they've only lost 5 times this season. They're seventh. Aston Villa, who did so well, along with VAR, to draw with Arsenal last week. They're encouraging. Fuck VAR. It screwed Arsenal on 3 occasions.
Shout out to my brother Kai Havertz once again.
Kai Havertz on VAR. Against Chelsea, he scored the winner. VAR's like, nah, your shoelace was offside.
He will be the headline every week.
And Havertz, showing his incredible dexterity, he stomached the ball into the goal.
They said, looked like a hand to me.
Didn't.
Yeah.
Didn't. Okay, so those games this weekend, we've got Brighton, who of course are Man United's daddy. They are taking on Everton at 5 o'clock.
I'm going to make sure you have that. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah,
that's fair. Everton will be away then. The Liverpool, they'll be taking on Ipswich. Ipswich are currently rather hopeless. They just took a huge drubbing from Man City, so look for another 3 points there. Wolves will be hosting Arsenal at 5 on Saturday. Bournemouth, Nottingham Forest, solid game there to kind of show Bournemouth's mettle. And there's a team that's had some ups and downs, but they carry on, huh? They just carry on. Also at 5, Man City, Chelsea. That's a big one for the weekend, Saturday, 7:30.
Big one for that fourth and fifth place.
Sunday, relegation game. Spurs versus Leicester. That'll be at 4. Aston Villa versus West Ham. The battle of the We Have the Same Kit. That'll be at 6:30.
And who cares about this
and
last
then,
game?
And then, big game here. Huge game for Man United, playing against the much-fancied Fulham away. Yes. Thoughts? Hopes? Prayers?
You know, when I've lost hope, it's I'm at the bottom.
Okay. Fair enough.
Let's just move on.
Okay, SA20, we are on that sort of final stretch now in the second half. Weather depending, Paul Royals have been bloody phenomenal.
Yep.
They really have been. They've got it together. Doesn't rain as much in Paul, of course, as it does in other places.
100%.
Jeepers, it rained. So, like the Durban games, another one got rained out early this week. But so Friday, Sunrisers Eastern Cape come back firing. They got absolutely hammered the first three games. But the next two games, they got bonus points. Yeah. That shows the balls. They'll be taking on Joburg Super Kings, 5:30 on Friday. Saturday, Paul Royals, Pretoria Capitals. That's your big day game, 1 o'clock. MI Cape Town versus Durban Super Giants. I'm going to be there, 5:30.
It's going to be dope for you.
Durban.
Oh, what beers, a setting.
Beers and views of the mountain.
Can't get much better than that, to be fair.
Sunday, Joburg Super Kings in the big one. Please can it not rain versus the Sunrisers, Eastern Cape at 3:30. That's the sporting weekend, guys. We have to wrap it up there. But we've got a new poll every week on the poll. If you go visit us on X, there we are. TRN, at TRN on the bounce. Get involved. Your options this week. So this is what Darvey will not vote on for the Stormers there because he's already rubbished them.
Yeah.
Who is the best chance for SA to win the URC? Our options, of course, are the Bulls, the Sharks, the Stormers, or the Lions. Vote in our poll.
Yes, sir.
And then, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all. Just vote in our poll.
Yeah, vote in our poll. That's what he wanted to say.
That's pretty much all I wanted to say. For more in-depth preview of the sporting weekend and how we are going into the weekend, of course, catch me on the Gareth Cliff Show every single Friday morning. That is, of course, on the Real Network, just like our show, just like the Shady Podcast. Just like the Let's Talk Man show, this is a place for all kinds of things, not just my face and Sandila's face every Thursday. Although those are good faces. Darvey, thanks for bringing your face in here as well this week.
What a pleasure.
Really appreciate your rugby insights. Sandila, I wish you the best in general.
Throughout this weekend. Guys, also check out the NFL. It's getting super exciting now.
Playoffs.
Yes, we're in the playoffs.
Don't get Darvey started on that. That's true love.
And right now I am saying go Kansas City. Let's go Pat Mahomes one more time and then get out the way.
Another red team for you to curse.
Cheers and damn you, man.